Thank you, Ernie, for the opening. It's kind of goes along pretty good with what I have to share this morning. I titled the message, Choosing to Wait on the Lord. I don't know about y'all, I am not a man that's known for my patience by any stretch of the imagination. And I don't know why waiting is so hard for me. It just is. It's not something I relish. Is it maybe a lack of faith, or is it just plain impatience? Is it a personality trait? I don't know what my problem is, but I have that problem. I'll just admit it. Some of y'all are very patient people, and y'all probably don't need this message in that case. I've known some very patient people in my life that they're a blessing just to watch how they handle problems, how they handle what comes up. The unknown for them doesn't seem to faze them that much. We live in a time and in a country where you can get nearly anything you want as quick as Amazon Prime can get it to you. That's all it takes. If you don't have the money, somebody will get you the money. They'll finance it for you. And getting things fast isn't all bad. In fact, it's downright convenient sometimes. But what it does to us is makes us so that every time we do have to wait for something, it makes it more of a struggle. It doesn't do anything good for my patience muscle. It doesn't do anything good for building that. And the Bible's got a lot of things to say about waiting. Some good things and some bad things. Some of the bad things are like laying in wait to shed innocent blood. Or Hosea 6:9 talks about a troop of robbers laying in wait, making their heart like an oven while they lay in wait. Though that's not the kind of wait we're talking about this morning. We're talking about waiting, like it says in Psalms 27:14, wait on the Lord and be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thy heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. That's the kind of waiting I want to talk about. Let's look at a man with a rather funny name. You can turn to Habakkuk. This is where the text will be from this morning. I'm not even sure how you pronounce that name properly. I asked my wife, and she said it probably depends whether you come from Pennsylvania or not. So the more you look at it, the harder it is to pronounce. But I'm going to call him Habakkuk, and if that's wrong, you can tell me after the service. But the name means embrace. It's a Hebrew name. And what do we know about him? We don't know a whole lot except what's in this book. As far as I know, it's the only place he's mentioned in the Bible. Here's four things we know about him. He was a prophet with a heart and a burden for the nation of Israel. He was living in the nation of Judah, I think it was Jerusalem, approximately in the last 2 to 3 decades before the Babylonians came through and smashed everything to nothingness. He was very troubled by the sin he seen in God's people. And he prayed to God, and while he wasn't satisfied with God's solution, he learned to accept it and be grateful for it. So Habakkuk 1, we'll read verses 1 to 4 to start here. This was his prayer to God, his cry to God. The burden which Habakkuk the prophet did see. O Lord, how long shall I cry, and thou wilt not hear? Even cry out unto thee of violence, and thou wilt not save. Why dost thou show me iniquity, and cause me to behold grievance? For spoiling and violence are before me, and there are that raise up strife and contention. Therefore the law is slacked, and judgment doth never go forth. For the wicked do compass about the righteous, therefore wrong judgment precedeth. Verse 1, it calls it his burden. You can almost feel the weight that he seems to be carrying on his shoulders for his beloved nation. And he asks, how long do I have to cry? How long do I have to go on like this before it seems like you hear me? It seems like you can't hear me, God. You ever prayed to God and it seems like he didn't hear? I know I have. It almost seems like God just sometimes ignores us. And it can be so frustrating for me to wait in those times because I know he's an all-knowing God, and I know he knows what my problem is, and I know he has the answer, but it seems like he's not giving it to me. Why can't, and I'm like, can't you give it to me, God? And it seems like that's a little bit where Habakkuk was here. And I don't know why God does that sometimes. I don't know why. All as I know is that God says, my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are my ways your ways. And as much as we as humans sometimes think we have to have the answer right now, we need to learn to rest in the fact that God is in control. Even if it feels like he's not listening to us, we need to understand that God is, in fact, in control. Verse 3, he's asking, why do I even have to see all this? This is hard for me to see your chosen nation of Israel going through this. Why do you even bring this before my eyes? The wicked are outnumbering the righteous in verse 4. And therefore, wrong judgments are coming out of the courts. That doesn't sound too far from where we're at today. Sometimes it seems like the wicked outnumber the righteous. And that's what he was seeing here. And he says, therefore, wrong judgment precedeth. All right, that was his prayer to God there in the first part. And then verses 5 through 11. Are God telling Habakkuk what's going to happen? We'll read those. Behold, ye among the heathen, and regard and wonder marvelously, for I will work a work in your days which you will not believe, though it be told you. For lo, I raise up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation which shall march through the breadth of land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. They are a terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity shall proceed of themselves. Their horses also are swifter than leopards and are more fierce than the evening wolves. And their horsemen shall spread themselves, and their horsemen shall come from far, and they shall fly as the eagle that hasteth to eat. They shall come for all for violence. Their faces shall sup up as the east wind. And they shall gather the captivity as the sand. And they shall scoff at the kings, and the princes shall scorn unto them. And they shall deride every stronghold, for they shall heap dust and take it. Then shall his mind change, and he shall pass over and offend, imputing his power unto his God. It's kind of hard verses to read, but God explains that he's sending the Chaldeans to wipe out the nation of Israel. I believe they were also known as the Babylonians, if I'm not mistaken. He says they're going to possess lands and dwelling places that aren't theirs. Basically, they're going to flatten the nation of Israel. What a fun thing to hear the Lord say he's going to do to your beloved nation. Okay, let's finish reading the chapter. This is 12 through 17. And this was Habakkuk's reply to God. Art thou not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. O Lord, thou hast ordained them for judgment. O mighty God, thou hast established them for correction. Thou art of purer eyes than to behold evil and canst not look on iniquity. Wherefore, look upon them that deal treacherously, and holdest thy tongue when the wicked devour the man that is more righteous than he, and maketh men as the fishes of the sea, as the creeping things that have no ruler over them. They take up all of them with the angle, and catch them in their net, and gather them in the drag. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore their net they sacrifice unto their net, and burn incense unto their drag, because by them their portion is fat and their meat plenteous. Shall they therefore empty their net and not spare continually to slay the nations? you hear what Habakkuk is telling God? He's saying, oh Lord, you ordained them for judgment, a brutal nation known for its evil. Oh mighty God, you established them for correction. Why'd you pick them? They're some of the most awful people on the planet, and you're sending them over here? They're a treacherous people, and they worship idols. And you're using the wicked people to devour your people. Why are you doing this, God? Can't you just straighten out the Jewish nation? Why do you have to use these people? Can't you just somehow make, instead of wiping us off the map, send somebody to straighten us out, not kill us all? We don't always understand why God does the things the way he does. We just don't. We're not going to read the rest of, which is, I'll talk a little bit about chapter 2. It explains, God explains to Habakkuk that the Chaldeans, these people that are coming, have judgment coming in their own time. They're not getting off free. There is a day when they will come, when they will face God's judgment and wrath for their ways. But for right now, God is using them to punish Israel. And then chapter 3 is Habakkuk's song. They call it Habakkuk's Song of Praise. And the best part of it is, it seems Habakkuk, even though he probably was disappointed that this was the way it was going to go down, he still accepted God's will and praised him for it and moved on with his life. It doesn't mean he didn't experience grief with it. It doesn't mean it's the way he wanted it, or he would have changed it if he could have. It doesn't mean any of that. It doesn't mean he whistled as he watched the nation being destroyed. He was a human. He was, you know, that's something that's kind of hard for me to understand. This was a real man, just like any of y'all sitting here. He loved life just as much as you or me. He didn't want to see these hard things come. And he probably wished God could find a different way. He wished that wouldn't have been God's perfect plan, but it was the plan God chose. And what the beauty of it is, he accepted it, and he made the best out of it that he could. He made the best he could and moved on with it. The last couple of verses there in 3:17 through 19. Although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither fruit be on the vine, the labor of the olive shall fail, and the fields shall yield no meat. The flock shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herd in the stall. Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Lord is my strength, and he will make my feet like hinds' feet, and will make me walk upon mine high places, to the chief singer on my stringed instruments. Verse 17 doesn't sound very appealing. The fig tree won't blossom. Olive harvest is going to fail. There's not going to be any meat in the fields. No sheep in the barns. No horses in the stall. Just a sense of desolation, almost like somebody bombed the place. But what's Habakkuk going to do? Anybody going to tell me what he's going to do in verse 18? What's it say? Rejoice. How can you rejoice? In all this, he's going to be as happy as he can be. He knew and accepted that this was God's will for his life, and he was fine with leaving it there. He's going to rejoice, sing, and worship. What a statement for a man that just got done arguing with God about his brutal plan. He apparently did not approve of God's plan, yet he accepted it. I think Habakkuk is, he's not a man we hear a lot of, but he could be a real inspiration. Just a quick recap on Habakkuk. Number one, he pleaded for God. Number two, he struggled to wait for God. Number three, he did not approve of God's way of handling the problem. And number four, he accepted God's plan and praised him for it. You know, I'm actually half decently good at doing those first three. It's not too hard for me to take my problems to God in prayer. Sometimes shame on me. I use it as a last resource, and I don't think to do it first off like I should, and that's shame on me. But when I think of it, it's not hard to take my problems to God. I'm a little bit like Habakkuk. I struggle to wait on God. He had that same struggle. I don't always know. I want to know what God's plan are in an instant. I don't want to wait on Him. I don't struggle too much with the third point there. Not approving of God's way of handling a problem. I don't always approve of the way God works in my life. It's not always my desire to a T. So I don't struggle with those first three, but where we as humans, and me especially, struggle is in the fourth point, accepting God's plan and praising Him for it. It's a hard thing to do. And in our minds, our human minds, it's not always the best, most efficient way we see of going about solving the problem. And sometimes we see people that they get all the way to this point and they never can quite accept what God's perfect will was. They never can quite lay everything down. They keep a little bit of it back. And the sad part is you see those people struggle and struggle and struggle their whole life long. They just never can quite accept what God had. They can't fathom that God's plan was better than what they had in their own mind the way it should be. It's not good for them mentally, physically, spiritually, or emotionally. And I think that's one of the points of this little book in the Bible, is to just accept God's will, what it is, even if we don't like it. Wait on Him for it and accept it when He brings it to us. Even if we don't approve of God's plan or timing, understand God knows exactly what He's doing, and He's doing it in the most efficient way possible. A quote I found is, "God is never in a hurry, but He's always on time." That's true. It's true. And the discouraging thing can be is, you can't do it one time and then the problem's solved. About the time I actually give up in an area, and I'm fine with God doing what He's going to do there to me, He finds another area and I got to do it all over again. Is that how y'all find it? That's how I find it for myself. I guess it's God's way of continually molding us into what He wants us to be. And there's times that we need, I'm not saying we never move ahead and don't make decisions. That's not what I'm saying here this morning. There's times that it seems like God doesn't give us an answer. And there's times we need to get counsel from brethren in the church, and we maybe need to move ahead. But what I am trying to tell us this morning is that God, waiting on things from God is good for us. We don't have to know everything right now. "I want what I want, and I want it right now" has made a lot of bankers rich in today's world. Have you ever thought about that? People can't seem to wait for anything till they have the money or money saved. If you look across America, there's a lot of folks that we live in a place you can get pretty much whatever you want, however quick you want it, because somebody they'll work it out for you. They'll get you the money. And as a result, there's a lot of debt and a lot of people living on the edge. And it's a miserable lifestyle. They simply couldn't wait. That's been me a few times in life. It sure has. What about our health? Waiting on our health. I was in the hospital one time as a patient, as a fairly young boy. I don't know, I was probably 10. But I remember the frustration of laying in that hospital bed. I was only in there a night or two. But I wanted to get out of there. And the few times I've been in there, like when we had babies or whatever, let me out of this place. Them block walls get old after in a hurry. Waiting on health issues like that, can we just wait? It's better if we do. I met a guy last week who had two broken ankles at the same time. And he came hobbling out the door. He wasn't an old guy. He was about my age, spry young guy. Came hobbling out the door on a walker with both feet were in a boot, walking boot. And it was a struggle for him to get around. And he was a healthy young chap. And I said something about it, and he said, he's just tickled he's not in his wheelchair anymore. He just got out of the wheelchair, and he was playing ball, coaching or something, and he jumped for a ball and came down wrong and broke both of his ankles. And I was impressed how I know he faced some struggles just from what he said, but he was fairly accepting of his situation, which is what he needed to be. You know what would have happened if he'd have said, no, I'm not going to wait on this to heal. I'm just going to do whatever I always did, and I'm going to run around, and it wouldn't have been healthy. It's much better for him to wait till his feet heal. I can get pretty sick and tired of being down with the flu for a day. Sometimes it's better just to stop and rest. Sometimes I think that's maybe the Lord telling us to slow down. One thing that can help me sometimes when I'm down is you can always look around and find somebody that's worse off than what you are. There's always somebody out there that's been in the hospital longer or worse off than you are. Always. I think about Mike and Carla and the baby when they had their preemie babies. That's a long time to sit in a hospital. A lot of patience. What about waiting on marriage? That's a tough one. I was a single guy myself at one time. I sure was. And I know and I understand the drive and the pull to get married. I get that. And it's not a bad drive. It's actually a God-given drive. It's a good thing. But that's an area where you see more people in America today wreck their lives, it seems like, making a hasty decision. They want to force this. I want to get married, and I'm going to do it right now. And I can guarantee you, if you don't force that decision, if you wait on God's timing on that one, you're going to be grateful the rest of your life. You sure will. We have all kinds of examples right before our eyes in America today about how people wreck their lives not waiting. Just wait. Sex before marriage is considered normal nowadays. That's just the way that people operate. They don't seem to think it's a big deal. And we Anabaptist people like to think it never happens in our circles. And sadly, I got to tell y'all know as well as I do, it does happen. It's not God's plan that way. Don't be fooled in thinking it's okay. Wait, just wait. Doesn't mean that people that have faced that, there's no forgiveness and they're, for the rest of their life, they're hampered by it. I'm not saying that. You can find forgiveness and move past that. But you talk about a hasty decision that can leave a scar on your life for a moment of weakness. God says wait, and God is right. Don't let the world fool you into believing it's okay. Switching gears a little bit. Teaching our children delayed gratification. That's hard. Have y'all ever? It's hard for adults. Try teaching a child that. I've seen the child in town that apparently got whatever they wanted whenever they wanted it. And were they a real fun family to follow around the aisle? It's entertaining. It's that, all right. But it can be frustrating. I've mentioned this test before, but I'm going to mention it again just because it fits in pretty good. The marshmallow test that Stanford University did on toddlers. They took a bunch of toddlers, I think like 400 or 500 of them. I hope they didn't do it all at the same time. That would have been a catastrophe. But they put them in a room by themselves where they could observe them. And they told them, they were obviously old enough to understand, they put a marshmallow or a pretzel in front of them, and they told them they're setting the timer for 15 minutes, and they're walking out of the room, and if the child doesn't eat this till the timer goes off, they can have two. It gets doubled, the treat. And they set the timer and they walk out of the room and they observe these children. And you can actually, if you look it up online, you can see pictures of the children. Some of them would cover their eyes and try not to look at it, or they'd look away, or they'd talk to themselves and look up at the corner, trying everything not to be tempted by this tree. And some of them, I think about 70% of them ate it right away, and about 30% of them waited. What's interesting is they followed these children 20 years later down the road, and the ones that were able to delay gratification and wait till the timer went off and eat both, then they could get two treats, lived a much more productive lifestyle than the ones that gobbled it down the second the person left the room. In fact, they linked obesity to it, depression. There were several other health issues that were linked directly to this, that if the child could had the patience to wait, it was much better for them 20 years later down the road. So this character trait can be built way back there and help you later, help your children later in life. Think on the story of Jacob and Esau. We all know how that went down. And delayed gratification is good for us adults too. It's not good just for children. I know when I was a young man, I had a... I'm still a young man. I was a younger man. I had a perfectly running, fine truck that did everything I needed it to. And I didn't need a new truck. I really didn't. But I found one advertised, and I thought I had to have it. You know how it is? It's a little bit better than what you had. And I bought it on a whim. I think I was actually dating at the time, and I asked my girlfriend what she thought, and she didn't have the nerve to tell me that I shouldn't buy it, and she should have. But I bought the thing, and it ended up being the biggest piece of junk I think I ever bought. I sold it like probably a year later and lost like $3,000 on it in just no time flat. I mean, that thing was, it was a piece of junk. Anytime I look back in my life, almost any time I look back and I was not willing to wait on something, it usually, and I did something stupid and impulsive, it usually cost me a lot of money and grief. That's just the way it was. Not always, but almost always. You can almost always count on the fact short-term pain means long-term gain, and long-term pain means short-term gain. Not always, but nearly always, if it's fun in the short term, it's bad for you long term. And if you can think ahead and think, is this going to hurt right now? Whatever the decision is, I'm going to wait. It's better for you in the long run. That's true in health, in finance, in your marriage. It's true in a lot of things. Patience is hard, but I think it's a worthy skill for us to learn. It's pretty much commanded in the Bible. It's mentioned in the fruit of the Spirit. And I know being patient is the right thing to do in waiting, but it seems like it's hard. It's a hard one for me. Especially in the revenue office. That is, y'all know what it's like. It's just irritating. You walk in there and you see a long line. I don't know. I can't handle it. I'll turn around and walk back unless I need something, come back later unless I need something really bad. But maybe it'd be good for me to stand there and wait. I don't know. I don't know how y'all do it, but between the revenue office and the TSA, it's about enough to burn up all the patience that you have. And it's one thing to turn around and walk out on things like that, like what I mentioned, the revenue op. I'm not saying that's a bad decision not to wait, but it's when we carry those decisions over into not waiting on life-changing decisions that we need to wait on God for. That's the areas that are really important to wait. When we choose not to wait on God's timing. Probably one of the most famous verses in the Bible that we all know, Isaiah 40:31. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength and mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. What's interesting about that verse is the first two words, but they, it kind of leaves the idea that there's some folks that don't. That's kind of why I titled the message, Choosing to Wait on God. You don't have to. God made you a creature of choice. He doesn't force you to wait on an answer from him. But we all know it's the best thing to do. And it says, but they that wait on the Lord, and then it gives us several shells. We shall renew our strength. We shall mount up with wings as eagles. We shall run and not be weary. And we shall walk and not faint. Doesn't sound like a bad deal. It doesn't sound like a bad deal to wait on God. I found this saying. It's a little long, so a little longer than a quote. But it says, waiting for God is not laziness. Waiting for God is not the abandonment of effort. Waiting for God means first, activity under control, second, readiness for any new command, and third, the ability to do nothing until the command is given. The only thing harder than waiting on God is wishing that you had. So like I said before, We are creatures of choice. We can choose to blunder ahead, like I've done several times in my life, and just hope it works out. We can choose to ignore waiting on God and just do whatever we want to. It's your choice. But don't forget about Habakkuk and how he dealt with it. Don't forget what God says several times through the Bible about waiting on him. My challenge to myself this morning and to all of us that might struggle with waiting and impatience is to learn from the life of Habakkuk. The 4 points that I mentioned: he pleaded for God, he struggled to wait for God, then he didn't approve of the way God planned to handle the problem, and then he finally accepted God's plan and he praised God for it. Can we be like that this morning? Can I be like that? Whatever God's plan is, I'll be fine with it. It's hard. It's not a natural human tendency. It's not. But I can assure you this morning it's worth the wait. That's all I have for a message this morning. Why don't we kneel for prayer?